Member Weiner?
Here.
And Chair Martin?
Here. Okay, so we have all of us here, so we'll call this meeting to order. And are there any committee member announcements or presentations today? Hearing none, we will press forward. This is the time for public comments. If there are any things on the agenda that you cannot stay for and comment at that time, you can do so now. Or if there's any other subject matter that this committee looks into that you would like to speak to that's not on the agenda, this would be the appropriate time to do so. Hyland, do we have anyone in the queue right now?
Thank you, Chair. There are no raised hands in the queue.
Okay. AGP, I believe Mayor Heading would like to speak during public comment.
Ah, okay. Mayor Heading, you may speak.
Hey, thank you very much. Thank you, Chair Martin and CFAC committee members, on behalf of the City Council. I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank you very much for your hard work this past year. You had a lot of things that you had to evaluate and participate in, and we greatly appreciate all of the work that you've done. We wanted also to wish you all a very happy holiday season and hope that you will be safe and travel well. And we look forward to working together with you this next year. Also wanted to let you know that I routinely attend your meetings, but because of the Brown Act, am not promoted as a panelist, but I'm here in the background soaking in all of the great knowledge that you have. So thank you very much, and happy holiday season. Looking forward to working with you this next year.
Thank you, Mayor Heading. Appreciate those kind words. Anybody else? Hyland?
Thank you, Chair. There are no more raised hands in the queue.
Okay, thank you. Then we will close public comments and move on to item A, which is the consent calendar, approval of the minutes for the November 16th, 2021 CFAC meeting. Are there any questions or corrections from anyone? Okay, hearing none, do we have a motion to approve as written?
John, this is Barbara. I'll move to approve as written.
Thank you, Barbara. And a second?
I'll second.
Okay, Steve Peck, second. And I think we do a roll call vote. Dana?
Sure, I'll do the roll call vote for you, Chair.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you, Sarah.
Sure, thanks. Member Spagnola?
Approved.
Member Alexander?
Yes.
Member Beckman?
Approved.
Member Johnson? Oh, muted. Can I get a thumbs up? I'm sorry if I missed it.
I'm sorry. I wasn't at the meeting, so should I abstain?
Oh, that's up to you.
That's what I choose. Thank you.
Okay. Member Peck?
Yes.
And Member Weiner?
Approved.
And Chair Martin?
Yes.
Okay, motion passes 501. 601,
right?
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, now we'll go on to the business items. Item B1 is a brief report from our assistant city manager, Sarah.
Thank you, and my apologies. I wasn't entirely prepared for the roll call vote, but I think Dana's going to be joining us for the last item, and she's going to get some other work done in between. So I'll give you a really brief director's update this afternoon. I wanted to mention that the city did receive the GFOA award for the fiscal year 1920 annual comprehensive financial report. So just a reminder, the new acronym is ACFR, Annual Comprehensive Financial Report. So that is the city's annual financial reports and the third-party audit. And your review of that last fiscal year was certainly helpful, and wanted to make sure that you were among the first to hear that we just recently got notice of that award. And I also wanted to remind the committee that applications are now open as four of our CFAC seats are expiring this year. And so applications are available now currently on the city's website, and they are due on January 4th. So encourage you or others that you know to apply to fill those four seats. And then I'm really going to keep it brief unless you have any questions for me, because I know you have a very full agenda today. And I did just want to note that from a timing standpoint, the first two items on your agenda, both the unfunded liabilities discussion and the Measure Q&E annual review, are more time sensitive than the third item on your agenda, which is the council compensation discussion that we've brought back per your request. So up to the committee on how you want to structure that, but just wanted to provide that staff input that the first two items are really more time sensitive, and if you need additional time at the end of the meeting, the third item we could bring back to you if needed. And with that concludes my update for today.
So Sarah, just to be sure about this, we have until about 5:30 today, is that right?
That's right.
Okay. All right, we'll try to squeeze it all in. I appreciate your comment about that. The order of the items on the meeting agenda, you know, typically if something's carried over, we would address that first, but I think you're right. The other two things are more pressing, so thank you for that. Any questions for Sarah? Okay, hearing none. We will press on to item B2. Which is pension and other post-employment benefit unfunded liabilities. And I believe we have a presentation today. Sarah?
We do, and I will just very briefly introduce NHA advisors. We should have, great, all three of them on the line, and so they can introduce themselves as well, but we have Craig Hill, Mike Meyer, and Roy Kim, all here from NHA advisors. We brought them on board to help walk the city through this analysis, and we really consider today's item as the first step in this discussion. So you'll notice that we're looking for some broad policy guidance from CFAC today, and depending on where you all go and where council ultimately goes with this, then we would certainly have some next steps and be coming back for the implementation of those. NHA Advisors does this work for a number of cities around the state, and they'll tell you a little bit more about that. But they have a lot of experience leading cities through these types of policy decisions and also the implementation phase if we need that assistance. And they also have familiarity with vendors in a lot of the area and a lot of these areas. And so I know that some of you had questions about that, and they can speak to that as well. So we have received a number of questions from CFAC members. They will try to address those in their presentation, but of course, feel free to raise any questions as always if there's anything that's not addressed. And so with that, I'm not sure who's gonna introduce the team. Is that you, Craig?
Sure, I'll go ahead and start. Thanks, Sarah.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, everybody. Craig Hill, Managing Principal for NHA Advisors. We are based out of the San Francisco Bay Area. With me today is Mike Meyer, Vice President, who heads up our pension consulting group, and Roy Kim. They're going to walk through the majority of this process. As Sarah mentioned, we are doing a lot of work around the state. We are not actuaries. We are municipal advisors, so we act in the capacity of representing public agencies on a number of different types of financial activities, whether it be liabilities like pensions and or financings related to capital projects. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mike and let him just kind of walk through. We've got a lot of information to try to get through. We do appreciate that we got some of the questions in advance. If you have anything that is you would like to question on any of these slides, please let us know. Otherwise, we'd like to just kind of try to get through it and then have a good dialogue with you afterwards. Mike?
Thanks, Craig, and good afternoon, committee members. Mike Meyer with NHA. Roy, we could probably go to the next slide, slide three, and just to jump right into it. I know that we've received several questions, so it sounds like the committee's had a chance to review the presentation. But just as a quick summary, this is primarily focused on the city's unfunded liability with CalPERS, which currently stands at about $29.3 million. It has increased pretty significantly over the last decade. That's a pretty common trend with all public agencies throughout the state of California who are CalPERS members. CalPERS did have a very good year last year. They beat their target rate of return by over 14%. They earned 21.3% in the market. So that will benefit all CalPERS members in terms of reducing this UAL. And we will get into some of that analysis in the body of the presentation. The city does also have an OPEB unfunded liability, $4.3 million. It has already started setting aside money in an OPEB reserve. We can touch on that a bit, although this presentation is primarily focused on the larger debt that the city has with CalPERS for pensions. As you might be aware, the city has historically been very proactive about addressing these costs in terms of building reserve levels that are dedicated to both pension and OPEB. Capturing the 3% discount that CalPERS gives the city every year by prepaying that in July, as opposed to monthly installments throughout the fiscal year. And then in 2020, making a pretty large contribution above and beyond what was required of about $500,000. As Sarah mentioned, this presentation, in addition to going through some of the historical cost trends and just some basics about CalPERS, is going to dive a little deeper into some of the more common cost management strategies that other public agencies are executing. Two of them involved essentially paying more than CalPERS requires using cash, reserves, or surplus, whether it's a 115 trust or paying that money directly to CalPERS. And then the third one involves actually restructuring that debt. Roy, we can jump right into five or slide six, actually. So the city does have two primary plans, one for safety members and then one for non-safety, and that's called the miscellaneous plan. And we've outlined the benefit levels here on the right side. There was a minor change made to the original draft. I think there was a typo in one of the benefit formulas. But overall, there are about 279 covered members for the miscellaneous plan. Only about 60 of those are active, so the remainder are retired or they've transferred to other agencies, but they are being covered by Morro Bay's CalPERS plans. And then on the safety side, there's about close to 140 covered members. About 35 of them are active. As you may be aware, all new employees over the last 6 or 7 years are covered under what's called a PEPRA plan. These PEPRA plans are lower costs for the city, also slightly lower benefit levels. These plans will help reduce the chance that, we run into another issue like CalPERS members have been facing over the last several years. But it is important to note that pretty much all of the city's unfunded actuarial liability is attributable to the classic plans and not the PEPRA plans. I believe the PEPRA plans' unfunded liability is less than $500,000. Slide seven, just a quick, wanted to define this UAL term that we're going to be talking about for the rest of the presentation. But first off, I think just important to clarify that the city makes two payments to CalPERS every year. One is the normal cost, and that is the annual cost for current employees. And then there's what's called the payment to amortize the unfunded accrued liability. And this is essentially the debt that the city has with CalPERS. And it essentially is the shortfall between what the city should have in assets in order to be 100% funded, which allows the city to the plan to pay out retiree benefits in full, versus what the city actually has in assets. And so you can see that in the chart to the right. CalPERS, based on the last report, estimates that your to be 100% funded, you would need $95 million in assets. The city currently has $66 million in assets, and so that shortfall of $29 million is essentially the gap that CalPERS needs to be repaid, and they assign an interest rate on that debt of 6.8%. It has been 7% over the last few years. They are going to be ratcheting that down to 6.8%. That's also the rate that they, that's their goal in terms of their investment returns each year. We'll talk a bit more about this later, but this UAL is a moving target. It does fluctuate year to year. So anytime CalPERS has a good year, similar to last year, they will actually reduce the UAL, and that'll be a direct impact to the city's payments in terms of a reduction. And anytime they miss their target, if they don't earn that 6.8 or that 7% or whatever the discount rate is at the time, they will actually add to this UAL. Slide 8, just kind of a quick review of why CalPERS members are in this situation right now. Important to remember that back in the 90s and early 2000s, the stock market was earning double-digit returns, so most retirement plans were super funded. There were no unfunded liabilities. The discount rate at the time was 8.25, meaning that CalPERS assumed that they would earn 8.25 for the foreseeable future on their investments. However, that's not what occurred. Over the last 20 years, their investments have been under 7%. The top right box is a quick summary of their returns over the last 5, 10, 20, and 30 years. Those are a little bit inflated because they do include the 21.3% from last year. If we were to have looked at that calculation last year, their 20-year average return was about 5.5%. That included the dot-com bust in the early 2000s as well as the 2008 recession. So essentially every time they miss their mark, unfunded liabilities go up. Also, whenever CalPERS changes their assumption, and primarily by assumption I mean their discount rate, that's their target rate of return, the unfunded liability goes up in that year after for all agencies. And so, again, that discount rate has come down several times over the last 20 years, from 8.25 down to currently a 6.8%. Other assumption changes that will impact the UAL are inflation assumptions, mortality rates, given that people are now living longer. Moving from an actuarial to a market valuation really drove up unfunded liabilities after the recession, because CalPERS started looking at what the actual value of assets was in their plans after that recession, instead of smoothing those losses out, which they were doing before that. And then lastly, one of the bigger impacts on cash flow for most agencies is the fact that CalPERS now amortizes this debt over 20 years instead of 30. So that means you are paying it off quicker, but it does mean your payments on an annual basis are a bit higher, so a little bit more challenging from a budgetary perspective. Slide 9, we get into, or slide 10 actually, we're going to look at some of the historical payments that the city has been making on this UAL to pay down that debt, as well as the projected payments. This slide is based out of the most recent CalPERS report, so it is still based on the 29.3 million UAL. We will, in a couple of slides, look at where we think the UAL is going, as well as those payments to pay it off. So, as I mentioned before, this UAL debt has increased from about 19 million to 29 million over the last decade, and then the payments to amortize that debt have grown pretty rapidly as well. You can see on the left side of that chart that the city was paying just a little over $1 million from 2014 through 2016. Those payments started to increase at about Just this fiscal year, the city made a payment in 2022 of about $2.1 million, and those costs were projected to increase to above $3 million over the next decade before they start to drop off in 2036. So, as I mentioned, if we go to slide 11, Roy, CalPERS did have a great year last year. For most of the clients we've looked at, the reduction in UAL is about 30 to 40% just based on the fact that they beat their 7% target by so much. They did trigger, based on their policy, a reduction, though, in the discount rate. So anytime CalPERS beats their target by a certain amount, it is already built into their current policy to reduce the discount rate. If they beat it, I believe it's not in front of me, by if they beat their target by a few percentage points or 5 percentage points, that discount rate only comes down by about 5 basis points. So it would have been a 6.95. But when they beat it by so much, they use that as an opportunity to ratchet it down by a larger amount. So that reduction to 6.80 does drive up the UAL just a little bit. So with both of those changes, we think that the new UAL for the city come next summer, once both of these changes are built into the reports, will be about $22 million. The other benefit of this reduction is that the big peak in payments that you were facing prior to this last year of good returns is going to hopefully be smoothed out. And so that royal blue line there shows what we believe the new payments will be on the $22 million of UAL debt. And as you can see, that number hovers between $2 and $2.5 million for the next decade or so. Again, another chance to note that it's a snapshot in time. Every year, you know, if CalPERS, let's say, has a year this year where they earn 0%, or let's say lose a few percentage points, this shape could be right back to where it was last year, with payments going up above $3 million. So, again, important to plan for years where CalPERS may not make its mark. Slide 12, we've been focused up until this point on the UAL, and we'll continue to focus on that in terms of cost management strategies. But just from a overall budgetary perspective, we wanted to give the committee a sense of how much in total CalPERS payments are projected going out each year moving forward. This is based on the lower $22 million UAL, and we also included the normal cost payments that the city is scheduled to make. And so with that discount rate change, the normal cost also goes up a little bit, probably somewhere between $50,000 and $70,000 a year. Annually, and those costs are a bit more level over time. So that's shown in the dark blue right there. Those costs are projected at a little over $1 million. And then on top of that, we layered in the UAL payments. So big takeaway here is that from an overall budgetary perspective, it's about $3.5 million going to CalPERS each year for the next 12 or 13 years or so. So getting into potential cost management strategies, some of these the city has already done. Some of them we've included, excuse me, some more information in this presentation to look at. So the first one is something the city's been doing, prepaying the UAL early in the fiscal year. The second one that some cities have looked at is negotiating cost sharing with employees. The third option, and by the way, numbers 3, 4, and 5 here, we're going to have several slides with a bit more detail on each one, so I'll be fairly brief right now summarizing them. But option 3 is to request a new amortization from CalPERS. Essentially, it provides you with a more level repayment shape of that debt, but CalPERS does require you to shorten the overall amortization period. So the upside is that you do pay off that debt sooner. You will save money in the back end, but you are required to pay higher in the early years. The option option four is essentially to use cash reserves or future surplus to apply those monies towards pension costs. And there's two, and that's above and beyond what CalPERS requires you to pay each year. And there's two popular vehicles for executing on this strategy. The first is setting up a separate trust. It's called a 115 trust. There's several providers out there, the most popular probably being PARS. Keenan is another active player in that market, and then CalPERS also offers a 115 trust at this point as well, and we'll talk about this vehicle in a couple of slides. The second option, city were to be in a situation where it has excess cash to deploy, is to just send that money directly to CalPERS and pay off specific portions of that UAL debt. The last option is to restructure this debt by issuing a new bond, a pension bond, and paying a lower rate on that bond and restructuring the payments in a more sustainable way. There is quite a bit of risk with this option as well, and we'll talk about that risk in a few slides. So the fresh start option, as I mentioned, this has always been an option that CalPERS offers, mainly because, and it's something we didn't touch on, the UAL debt that you have with CalPERS is really, there's about 50 different pieces of that debt, and they all have different amortization periods. Some are short, like 14 or 15 years. Some are longer, 27, 28, 29 years. And when you aggregate them all together, you get that very, very irregular payment shape. And so a lot of agencies are looking to create a new repayment shape that's a bit smoother and more predictable for budgeting. So this Fresh Start does help with that. The big change that CalPERS did about 5 or 6 years ago is that they required agencies to actually shorten the amortization. So it used to be that you could extend it if you needed some cash flow relief and you wanted to bring down the annual payment, but they do require you to shorten the amortization. We picked a 15-year option out of the CalPERS report, but essentially you can do any term that makes sense so long as you're paying less in interest over time to CalPERS. So you know, you could do a 16 or 17 year, probably. You could also do a 12, 13, or 14 year, as long as CalPERS can see that the overall payments are less under that option. And we'll get into, this is a very, very similar strategy to doing what's called an ADP, an additional payment to CalPERS, because it's you're paying more and it's going to CalPERS. The one difference is that under a fresh start, you're actually locking into this new schedule, and you do not have flexibility to go back to your old schedule. So for that reason, we don't see it commonly utilized, because there are ways to essentially get to the same place without restricting yourself in terms of in this higher payment schedule. Slide 16, 115 trust is a very popular vehicle. I know that there's at least 300 CalPERS members out there right now that have 115 trust. Up until about a year ago, CalPERS did not offer a 115 trust, so they were all managed by third parties, as I mentioned, PARS, Keenan, PFM. There's a couple other active companies out there that are managing these trusts, but essentially it is a separate trust that's not managed by the city. It's managed by a third party. There is an investment advisor that's part of the team to help the city figure out how to invest that money. They have different investment portfolios based on your risk tolerance, but legally, once that money is put into the trust, it must be used for pension or OPEB expenses. So one of the big benefits of this is that your current reserves in your general fund, you are restricted in how you can invest that money by the government code. So once you get it into a 115 trust, it does expand the types of options you have to invest that money. The other big benefit of the 115 trust, and something that we hear a lot from our clients, is the flexibility. You know, you can use that money in a tough year if you don't have enough money, let's say in the general fund, just to make your annual contribution. You could actually use money from the 115. So it does act as a shock absorber in a sense in the future if you do have a challenging budget year or if there's more UAL added in the future. The UAL with CalPERS is not directly reduced because you're not giving CalPERS the money, but you can take that money from the 115 and pay off your UAL at any point in time. So you can wait till it grows to a larger amount and then fully pay off your UAL with CalPERS. During that period of time when you have money there, you can make annual payments to CalPERS or ADPs. So it is, there is quite a bit of flexibility with the 115 trust. I will say for the most part, 80% of the agencies out there in the 115 trust are in a more conservative or moderate type investment portfolio where perhaps the target rate of return is between 3% and 5% as opposed to trying to, you know, match CalPERS portfolio, which is a bit heavier on the equities and real estate side, and try to meet their 7% target. But again, there are options in these 115 trusts that are more aggressive if that's what the city was looking for. Slide 17, an ADP is an additional discretionary payment to CalPERS. So if you do have excess money, whether it's from your general fund, from an enterprise fund, or from that 115 trust, at any time you can take that money and pick and choose which layers of that UAL you'd like to pay off. And CalPERS will actually give you credit at the interest rate that they're assigning to that debt. So it's currently 7%, but it will be going to 6.8%. Obviously, they give you that credit because they believe they'll make that in the market. Of course, if they don't make that in the market, you'll see new UAL no matter what. The benefit of this option is that it will reduce your future payments because you are actually paying off that debt, so your bill to CalPERS will be lower. It is a direct reduction to your UAL, so your funding ratios will go up. I believe right now they're for all the plans, they're in the high 60 percentile, so those would likely, you know, be increased if you were to give CalPERS money. Again, there is potentially more potential for higher returns because CalPERS does invest that money fairly aggressively relative to some of the options out there with the 115 providers. But at the same time, that could be looked at as a risk in terms of reinvestment risk. You already have 60 plus million that's invested with CalPERS. So some agencies look at these 115 trusts as a way to diversify who's managing the money and perhaps reducing some of that risk. Slide 18, we wanted to just to actually, before we get into a couple scenarios, just side by side, just again to clarify some of the differences. The 115 trust does not directly reduce your UAL with CalPERS. In your CAFR or with CalPERS directly. You do have a bit more control of the investment strategy. I know that PARS and Keenan and most of the more active 115 providers offer at least 5 or 6 different investment options based on risk tolerance, and they do have, even within those, passive as well as active plans, depending on how active you want that investment advisor to be. On the CalPERS side, that now that they have a 115 trust, they did not before. I believe they're offering 2 types of investment products, so it's not only the investment portfolio that they manage all of the other pension funds with, and they're trying to target 6.8%, but they do offer some lower risk type investment options. I believe there's 2 portfolios out there right now that they're offering. Again, just looking at the second to the bottom row, the key difference in our mind is the flexibility. With a pay down to CalPERS, you will see a reduction in your payments, but that money does get invested right away. It's gone. The 115 trust, the flexibility of having that money to dip into perhaps during a year when the budget is strained is an important characteristic of that option. As I mentioned before, both of these are very popular options. We have clients that do both. Their cost management strategy is multi-pronged, so kind of a combination of a lot of the options that we just discussed. But for both of these, you know, there's several hundred cities across the state that have been executing. Slide 19, we wanted to, you know, there's a lots of variables that could come into play with comparing these options, and it could be very heavy on the quantitative aspects, but there's a lot of variables. The most importantly, what will the future returns be? As well as, perhaps a 115 trust provider. All those are very much unknown, but we did want to put together a few hypothetical scenarios to show the potential benefit of these options. And so in talking to Sarah, we know that the city is in a good position from a budgetary perspective in terms of having some surplus funds that it can look to bolster various reserves. So we did assume that $1 million is invested next fiscal year, again, just an estimate, and then about $500,000 each year for the next 10 years or so. We did assume a more conservative rate of return than CalPERS at about 4.5%. Again, that could be, you know, we could change that estimate, of course, but we wanted to go kind of right in the middle of the most conservative and the more aggressive portfolios. And what we charted here was in blue the current estimates for the UAL debt balance going down over time with CalPERS, because you are going to be paying that off each year based on the current schedule. And then in orange, we have the growth of this 115 trust balance. And we estimate that the funds in the 115 would be enough. They'd grow to the point where you could actually take that money and fully extinguish the UAL at about 2034, so about 10 years earlier than currently scheduled. If we go to the next slide on 20, a very similar outcome, but a different way of executing it is to take any surplus cash, and you would actually just pay off UAL directly with CalPERS, and you would again get to pick which amortization layers make sense. Because the city is facing the most cash flow pressure over the next 15 years, those are the pieces of the UAL that we assumed would be paid off. And to keep it fairly similar to the 115 option, we assumed that the same amount of money was going towards these pay downs each year. So $1 million the first year, and then $500,000 each year going forward. And you can see in that blue line, as you send CalPERS money and you pay off the UAL, the actual required contributions to pay off the remaining UAL start to go down. And then at some point in the near future, you would have given CalPERS enough money where your UAL is fully paid off. We estimate around that same year. Again, all of these are very highly dependent on CalPERS returns, future assumption changes, which are going to change year to year, but wanted to kind of show in graphical form and just high level the benefit of these potential strategies. Slide 21, Roy, I believe. So we have a few slides on the strategy of actually issuing a bond to pay off the UAL debt with CalPERS. And this has been a fairly popular strategy in the last year, just given where interest rates are. But as we'll get into, there is a considerable amount of risk as well. The common structure that most agencies use is called a pension obligation bond. This is payable by the general fund, so it's a general fund debt, but there is no collateral required that would be like a lease revenue bond, which is the type of general fund debt that most cities would issue for capital. This structure does require a validation process in the courts to essentially confirm that that UAL debt is a debt that can be legally refinanced. That's a process that takes 3 to 4 months. It does not lock someone into doing a POB, but it does provide you the option to do that at some point in the future. Some cities, for different reasons, have looked to a lease revenue bond to effectuate this type of restructuring. The benefits of this being that you're converting higher interest rate debt that you have with CalPERS down to lower interest rate debt. Most of the pension bonds that have been issued in the last year have been between the high twos and the mid 3%. And then secondly, the ability to reshape your debt payments into a smoother and more predictable schedule has been an objective that most agencies have prioritized. The big downside, and we do have a slide on this, is that any savings are really dependent on CalPERS future returns. And so there is a good amount of reinvestment risk and market timing risk because cities are giving CalPERS a very large chunk of money at one time, and that money gets invested in the market. So you are taking on a bit more market risk with that big chunk of money going to CalPERS. The next slide, as I mentioned, there's been about 80 agencies that have issued these types of bonds for $7 billion in UAL funded over the last 18 months or so. The market's been very volatile. When this market's kind of came back, this was a very a dormant market for about a decade after the bankruptcies of Stockton and San Bernardino. There was a lot of investors that lost money on those pension bonds. They never got paid back. And so there really was no market for pension bonds, no investors that would buy them. However, we did see that change in the last 2 years. And we've also seen interest rates at low levels. So those rates, again, have ranged from about 2.5 to the low fours. Slide 23, just a quick kind of snapshot of what a hypothetical restructuring could look like for the city of Morro Bay. You know, the one thing I mentioned earlier is that there is flexibility to tailor the repayment shape in a way that works better. Also, the term, that's also a variable. So some cities have shortened their term, some have extended it all the way to 30 years. Very similar to a mortgage, the longer the term, the lower the annual payment, and the shorter the term, slightly lower interest rate, but you have higher annual payments. So just to talk about this conceptually, we did look at a 15, a 20, and a 24-year option. You can see that those provide a payment level of between 1.4 and about 1.8 million instead of the blue bars, which are closer to the 2.4 million mark. 24, again, a lot of numbers that we don't need to dwell on, but we did, this does summarize some of the projected savings from a restructuring. Again, this is all dependent on CalPERS actually earning their 6.8%. I will get into some of the risks on the next slide, but I think the big takeaway here is that on a present value basis, you can see in the fourth row from the bottom, the savings ranges from about 5.4 to 6.1 million, and on an annual basis from about 433,000, you can see that in the left column, up to about 930,000, which is under the longer term, the 24-year term. The next slide is I think we touched on the benefits, obviously lower rate, higher funding ratios with CalPERS and flexibility to create a more predictable repayment shape. The big risk is, again, reinvestment and market timing risk. And what this means is that savings aren't guaranteed, and they are actually dependent on future CalPERS returns. And that is a primary concern of the GFOA. It's why the GFOA does not recommend that agencies issue pension bonds. But what this risk really means is that a city is better off if CalPERS earns more than the rate you pay on the bond over the next 20, 25 years. So if you were to borrow on your new bond at 3.5%, as long as CalPERS earns above 3.5% on average, the city would have been better off. However, if CalPERS, let's say, only earns 2%, the city would actually be worse off having done that restructuring. So it's an unknown at the time of actually issuing the bond. It's why that on all of these restructuring projects, we always recommend a stress testing process just to better understand this risk. So if this is something the city were to look at either now or sometime down the road, we think it's really important to essentially quantify this risk and to look at what would happen to savings and your payments with and without a pension bond if there were a more dire situation. So perhaps if there was another 08-like recession, or if CalPERS only earned, 3 or 4% for the next 20 or 25 years. We did add a quick stress test just to show conceptually what we mean by this reinvestment risk. And so what we looked at, again, this is just the 20-year POB option in the bottom orange line versus the blue bars, which is what you're currently projected to pay to CalPERS. If there was a situation where CalPERS earned negative 15% in the very first year after issuing the bond, we show in this chart what would happen to your payments with and without a pension bond. So in the gray bars, that would be your payments having not done the pension bond. So we think that the new UAL that would get added from this market crash would be about $18 million. That's on top of the, the $22 million that you already have. If you had done a pension bond and you had more assets that are exposed to that loss, we actually think that the new UAL that would get added would be higher, so like $23 million, and that's shown in the orange dotted line there. So you can see that if CalPERS were to have a big market drop, there really wouldn't be much savings from doing the restructuring, and actually your payments would be a bit higher in those out years in 2037 through 2043. So again, just a very quick snapshot. A lot of the stress testing for these projects is done by third-party actuaries who are a little bit deeper and could do deeper analysis on some of these what-if scenarios. So I'm going to wrap it up and then hopefully open it up to questions. And I know, Sarah, there's a slide here on the staff recommendation, but I think just to reiterate, this is a, as Craig mentioned, we have worked with about 80 CalPERS members over the last couple of years. This is a very similar conversation. These pension costs have been rising rapidly over the last decade. For most of our clients, they're double what they were 5 or 6 years ago in terms of percentage of budget. So again, incorporating a lot of the new numbers in the budget and long-term forecasting process is critical in our opinion, and also conducting sensitivity analysis, looking at some what-if situations. We know that there is a risk that CalPERS will have down years in the future. There's a lot of very user-friendly tools out there that CalPERS offers now to help quantify a lot of that. The city is in a lucky position in terms of, building up some reserves, having some surplus after this fiscal year. So always prudent to look at paying down your highest cost debt, whether you do that in a 115 trust to maintain some flexibility in the near term, or if you send that money directly to CalPERS, both are prudent strategies in our opinion. They're also looked at very favorably in the marketplace, both by third-party credit rating agencies who are looking at you know, what type of cost management strategy cities are employing to tackle this debt, because this debt is really, for almost every city across the state, the largest general fund debt on your books. I think between the two, given the fact that Morro Bay has a fairly volatile revenue stream compared to other cities that maybe are more heavily dependent on property tax, which is a bit more steady, I think the 115 trust should be looked at. It does offer that flexibility in the near term in case revenues didn't come in as expected. So it does give the city a little bit more budgetary flexibility. Of course, if the city ever wanted to do an ADP, you can also do that out of the 115 trust, so it doesn't really preclude you from doing that ADP strategy. The restructuring concept, again, this is a very complex type of debt instrument that does carry a lot of risk. If that's something the city ever wanted to look at in the future, we'd be happy to provide more information, but we do think that does require a more comprehensive evaluation, just given the nature of those risks. And then very lastly, one area that a lot of our clients have been looking at is actually memorializing their pension cost management strategy into a policy. Those policies look a lot different depending on the city and its different goals and its constraints. A lot of times it's part of an overall reserve policy, but for the most part, it provides a little bit more detail on how the city intends to tackle this problem over the long term, some of the strategies that it would consider employing, and when those actually maybe wouldn't be the right option, and then also sometimes just a little more detail on how surplus monies, one-time monies, would get allocated towards pension or OPEB if that is a priority of the city. So with that, I'll go to slide maybe 29, Roy, and maybe turn it back to Sarah. Do you want to cover this slide before we open it up to questions?
Sure. Thanks, Mike. Thank you for the comprehensive presentation. So given all of the information presented and given Morro Bay's situation currently, which is that we do have your fiscal year 2021 operating surplus in the general fund of approximately $2.5 million. That's still an unaudited number, but we have that. We have council's direction on the general fund emergency reserve, and we have the established council goal and reiterated council goal of addressing the unfunded liabilities. So we're trying to look at all of those in concert with each other and proceed with some first steps towards addressing the unfunded liabilities. So that's the background that informs these recommendations today. We would recommend as a first step that council direct staff to create a Section 115 trust as the vehicle for a pension reserve, and that they establish a pension reserve as a first step. We would probably follow that with a policy conversation, as has just been outlined. We've looked at some examples from other cities. And then in concert with that as well, we are recommending that you would direct council to ask us to evaluate our current OPEB trust. I know there were some questions with that, so I'll just provide a little bit more flavor briefly. We do have a restricted trust instrument currently with ICMA, and the balance in that is $2.1 million. As some of you know, the ICMA rep for the city unfortunately passed away recently, and there's been some transition there as well as obviously at the city. So I am in the process of looking into the specifics of that trust, but the intent would be the same, to address the bigger, much bigger CalPERS unfunded liability, and to similarly address the much smaller OPEB liability by investing these types of one-time surplus funds into restricted trusts that help the city start to address these unfunded liabilities in a way that allows budgetary flexibility going forward, so that if there were another situation like the onset of the pandemic or a significant recession, that we would have the flexibility to utilize these funds. And I just want to add a little bit more specificity to what Mike said, to utilize these funds even to make a normal payment to CalPERS in a given year, for example, if the city were ever to be in a situation where that would be a challenge for the general fund, then these Section 115 trust funds can be used not only to make a UAL payment or an ADP additional payment, but they can also be used to make a normal payment to CalPERS in times of financial hardship. So those are our recommendations this evening or this afternoon. And with that, we'll open it up to any questions.
Okay, Sarah, can we go through the questions that were submitted in writing? Can you just go through those and maybe read them as you get to them, and then either you or Mike or Craig can address those questions?
Sure. I think some of them.
John?
Yeah.
Some of the questions that I submitted have been answered through the presentation.
Okay, so what are you saying? You don't want your questions read? Homer?
I would just like to ask a couple of the questions that didn't get done during the presentation for time reasons.
Okay, so you don't want Sarah to go through your questions that you submitted?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Then Sarah, the other questions, I guess.
Okay, and Chair Martin, I think the majority on this item were actually your questions, so I'll defer to you on whether you'd like to select the ones that weren't answered or you'd like me to go through all of them.
Just go down the list, please.
Okay. So the city has $2.1 million in OPEB reserves. Where is it deposited? How is it invested? How much did it earn in fiscal year 2021?
Sarah, hold on. Let's just focus on the CalPERS questions rather than the OPEB questions, okay?
Perfect.
So the other one.
Which option provides the greatest certainty of reducing cash payments over 20 years?
Sarah, I can probably address the first several if that is helpful.
That'd be great. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, and I might read off the first few because I think they go together and they might have a similar answer in that it's a tough one to answer. But the question was, again, which option provides the greatest certainty of reducing cash payments over 20 years? The next one was which option best reduces cash payments in the near term and which option carries the greatest long-term risk? These are very tough to answer because it's very dependent on the future CalPERS returns and Section 115 provider returns. I would say a restructuring option, because you're converting that debt, that interest rate from a 6.8 to 3.25, let's say, you can reduce your payments by the largest amount possible, that in terms of magnitude. But on the flip side, that does carry, to your third question, the greatest long-term risk in terms of you're taking on more market timing and reinvestment risk. If you're giving CalPERS $20 million on one day, any near-term gains and losses are going to be highly magnified. And just to kind of share an example of that, if, a lot of the pension bond issuers who issued last year, they timed it pretty well where, CalPERS earned 21.3%. That benefit got magnified because they gave them a large chunk of money. So in reality, they probably earned a lot more than that. Whereas there were some cities who issued pension bonds right before the 08 recession. Those losses that they took were magnified because of the timing risk. So, in terms of the other two options, the ADPs to CalPERS will directly reduce your bill to CalPERS. But of course, you are paying in more money each year to make those ADPs. So essentially, it's a wash. The fourth one on the fresh start analysis, we did use it was easy to just pull out numbers from the CalPERS report. They do provide a 15-year, so that is based on the current payments. It isn't based on the new projected payments that are part of the lower $22 million UAL, but it would be a very similar concept in the sense that you can choose any fresh start term that makes sense, so long as that you can show that your payments over that time are smaller than they're currently scheduled for. So just in theory, if you're shortening the term, you will pay a little bit higher in the near term, but you will create a more level payment shape. And if flexibility is not a priority for the city, that could be it's an option. It's an option that allows you to pay off your debt sooner. It does provide savings in the out years. But again, we would caution you, just given the limited flexibility, if that was something you wanted to essentially effectuate, you could also just do ADPs each year to CalPERS and pay extra and get to the same place, but not be locked in. The fifth question.
Mike, before you go on, just to let you know that nobody else on the committee has actually seen the questions, and neither has anybody in the public. So if you could just ask the question before you give the answer, that would help. Oh, and now you're muted.
Yeah, sorry. I apologize for that. The question that I was answering there was that NHA uses CalPERS data for the Fresh Start analysis, but they use their own projected UAL payments for the other analysis. Why? All of these numbers are either based on the projected payments from the CalPERS tool on their website, or they're from the actual actuarial report. So all of this data is from CalPERS. The Fresh Start is based on a higher UAL number, but we just use that for simplicity and really to show the concept, which is a Fresh Start is shortening the term if you're okay with taking on higher payments in the near term. The fifth question is, why is there no present value savings for a Fresh Start? So typically the term present value savings we use with the restructuring option because you're converting debt from 7% to, let's call it 3.5%. So there's going to be present value savings. The reason there's no present value savings from the Fresh Start is because the interest rate isn't changing. CalPERS still assigns you the same 7 or 6.8% rate. So when you actually look at all the future savings, some years you'll be paying more, some years you'll be paying less, and you discount that rate back at the 7%, it's a zero. So there's no interest rate savings is probably a better way of framing that. The next question is, how does the Section 115 trust option, which is tested at 4.5% return, result in a greater savings than Fresh Start, which has an expected 6.8% return? Good question, and I don't want to get too deep on the quant, but it's a little bit of apples and oranges to compare these scenarios, because on the 115, we're assuming that the city actually kicks in $1 million extra the first year and then $500,000 every year moving forward. So a lot of that savings is because you're actually going to start paying more immediately. The Fresh Start is requiring less in terms of the initial. Maybe Roy, we could go to the Fresh Start slide. I believe the added payments in the first couple of years that we had in our scenario are only about $2.5 million. Whereas when we looked at the Section 115 trust and the ADPs, we have the city contributing over $6 million over you know a 10-year period. So it's a little bit apples and oranges, and I would really recommend that you know we could get really into the weeds on numbers here, there's a lot of variables at play, mostly what future returns will be, and I would encourage the committee to kind of focus on the differences in these different cost management strategies in terms of flexibility and just how these vehicles work and what would work best for the city. The next one, and I didn't I apologize, I hadn't read this one yet, but it says the three legacy plans account for 98% of the UAL. The city can select a fresh start for any one of them without affecting the others. Also, the city may select a 10 or 15 year amortization. So there are six fresh start options for the city. This isn't discussed. And that's exactly right. You actually have an infinite amount of options, not just 10 or 15. You could do 11, you could do 12. Sometimes an actuary will allow you to collapse just certain portions of the UAL versus, you know, the whole plan. But you're right that it is by plan. And the one big requirement just to keep in mind is that CalPERS does require it to be a shorter term than currently scheduled. The next question is, do POBs or pension obligation bonds become a general fund obligation? That is correct. It is a general fund obligation. The one difference between there is no collateral for a pension obligation bond, whereas, you know, typically a city would issue a lease revenue bond for, let's say, capital, new capital debt. There would actually be collateral there. You'd probably have to pledge a building or a park or an asset. So there is nothing pledged for a pension obligation bond, but it is an obligation payable by the city's general fund. Although very similar to your normal CalPERS costs, those are usually split between the general fund and other enterprise funds based on some sort of allocation. So whether it's that pension bond debt or it's just your UAL debt, it is. There are other funds typically paying besides the general fund. That gets into the next question, which is how much of the total liability is for enterprise funds. I'm going to maybe ask Sarah if you know a rough percentage of the miscellaneous plan that's allocable to non-general fund.
I'm looking that up, and I'll get back to you based on the 21-22 budget, because we do allocate that out, and we allocate those costs out to the enterprise funds. We do that every budget year according to the staff breakdown for that fiscal year. And so by the time you're done going through the list, I should have a rough percentage.
Okay, great. Thank you, Sarah. And I will say that for other clients, again, the safety plan is all general fund. The miscellaneous plan is the one that's, there's some allocations depending on how big your sewer or your water enterprise is. So for some cities, that might be 60-70% of the miscellaneous plan. For some, it might be very small, you know, 20-25%. So my guess is you're somewhere in between there. The next one is, do restrictions on the money from the American Rescue Plan impact or limit the city's options to pay down the retirement liability? Craig, I might defer to you on this. I don't believe you can directly use that money to pay down pension debt. Obviously, there are probably other ways to reallocate funds, to use ARPA money for other projects and reallocate that money previously budgeted for pensions, but I am pretty sure you cannot directly use that to pay down pensions or OPEB.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. The last question is, since NHA projects flat cash payments for the next 14 years, is the no action option viable? And Roy, maybe we could just go to slide, I believe it's 12 or 11. Exactly right. The nice benefit of the 21.3% from last year is that your payments will be a bit more level and under that 2.5. I will say that we have not been, working with the city long enough to really look at your long-term the viability of affording these payments. My guess is that this is an affordable payment for the city, but it really comes down to what other priorities you have and whether it's strategic to start paying down debt that's at 6.8% and also trying to earn more on that money that's currently probably getting 0.5% in your general fund. And looking to earn more on that money could be a financially strategic move. But as we always say, I think it really comes down to what other priorities there are for the city, for that money. I would also just caution, I know the stock market's been extremely volatile. I didn't even look at it today, but, you know, if CalPERS has a year where they just lose 5%, let's say, the city might be right back to where we were just looking at with those blue bars. So, you know, over $3 million in payments. So I think really important to plan for some of those downside scenarios and have the resources to deploy if needed in that situation.
Thanks, Mike. And to answer the Enterprise Fund question, for fiscal year 21-22, approximately one quarter of the citywide UAL payments, so that's across the safety and miscellaneous, is attributed to Enterprise Funds.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Mike. Okay, Homer, you're up.
I've got a couple questions for Mike. On page 16, according to the presentation, of a 115 would be managed by a third party. You mentioned PARS and Keenan, if I have that right. What kind of firms are these?
These are investment trust firms that specialize in these 115 vehicles. I believe PARS stands for Public Agency Retirement Solutions. They actually offer more than just 115 trusts, separate plans than CalPERS. And as I mentioned before, CalPERS did also just set up an option for a 115 trust with two different investment plans that are a little different than what they invest all their pension funds in.
If Morro Bay would set up a 115, would it be pooled with other agencies?
No, it would not. It would be Morro Bay's money.
On page 18, you mentioned, the question is, who would control the investment strategy?
The city controls the investment strategy to some extent. I have more experience with PARS and Keenan to know that they both offer six different investment vehicles based on your risk tolerance. So something that's very conservative, focused on, let's say, fixed income, to something more aggressive that's focused on equities. It's very similar to kind of your options for a 401k plan. There is an investment advisor that's assigned. There are fees with these, and that's an important distinction. So we have, some of those fees are for management of the investments. Some are just a percentage of assets. So it's something that we encourage our clients to compare across all these firms. Also, you know, meet these people. If you're going to have an investment advisor, very easy to have a call with these folks to talk about their plan for Morro Bay. So there is some flexibility there in terms of control. The city would be working with the investment advisor to select which investment option works best.
And the investment, I'm a little confused that the investment advisor would be an employee of one of these firms?
Yes, for each firm, it's a little different. Keenan has kind of an in-house investment advisor. I think PARS, their investment advisor is part of, I believe it's Highmark Capital, but it isn't something that the city would actually go out and, you know, hire separately. It's part of their offering.
When you say their fees, would they be typical of an investment manager, private sector investment manager, one to one and a quarter,
Yeah, and, we did send Sarah something that she can probably share with you after this call, but we did compare the fees for the top providers.
Okay.
But you're right. The fees range from about 0.25 up to a full percentage point, depending on whether it's more active, more passive, and also how much in assets you have, which I think for a city like Morro Bay is a key factor. Some of these firms charge differently based on the size of the assets managed.
Do both firms basically have, a half a dozen locked in choices?
That's correct.
Okay, so the city is not actually directing.
You're directing
Procter & Gamble buy a bond or something.
Yes, yeah, it's limited control. You're telling them which of the six options you want to be in.
Okay. Who sets up the 115 trust?
The city, there would be an approval and certain documents that would need to get signed. So there is typically, for some of our clients, as their advisor, we can help with that process. But for the most part, these agencies would come in and present. They would work with staff to probably come up with a recommended investment option. There would be a formal approval needed to actually set up this trust by the City Council of Morro Bay.
Right, but I mean, so the city attorney is the one that would basically do it?
When you say do it, what do you mean?
Well, set the trust up. I mean, it's not.
Yeah, it's pretty low maintenance in terms of staff time. The PARS or Keenan or whoever would actually do this setup, but the documents would need formal approval by the city council.
Gotcha. I have a couple questions for Sarah. You mentioned that there's a $2.5 million surplus in the year ending June 21 general fund. Do you know off the top of your head if that includes the $282,000 that was transferred from Measure Q&E at mid-year?
It does not. So the operating surplus is just in the general fund. That doesn't include the general fund emergency reserve balance, and that $282,000 was transferred into the general fund emergency reserve fund.
Okay, but assuming that some of the 2.5 is going to be put in the emergency reserves, I guess what I'm trying to figure out is that does Q&E get the 280, is going to get the 282 back?
That's not my understanding of the adopted budget documents.
Oh, okay. And then if the city decides to go ahead and make some annual payments to pay down the UAL, is there any conflict with that and the new a general fund emergency reserve policy that the city council just recently set up?
That's what we would look at and take to council, and there would likely need to be a policy discussion. You know, I think one of the things that some cities look at is if there is a desire to have a high level of general fund emergency reserves, which has been expressed in Morro Bay, then perhaps a pension reserve could serve as a portion of that, in that it provides you the flexibility in an economic downturn to utilize your pension reserve to make your normal pension payment for that fiscal year. So in effect, it gives you some flexibility. It wouldn't be the entire general fund emergency reserve, but those are the types of policy options that we could bring before council and get direction before we determine what dollar amount to put into a vehicle like a Section 115 trust.
The slide wasn't shown during the presentation, but at the very end, there was a slide number 32, which gave a couple examples of a new policy on how to, how to deal with these certain, that one. I thought that was pretty neat. And hopefully something the city council will get to see. Oh, that's all, John. Thank you.
Okay, Homer. Barbara, do you have any questions?
No, basically, I'm sorry, I didn't have a lot of any pre-written questions because my experience is more in the finance and the private enterprise, but I found the presentation that we received ahead of time very helpful, and I appreciate Mike's presentation. The only other comment I wanted to make is I do recall we had an audit presentation about 3 years ago or so, and it's my recollection they briefly mentioned this was our auditor, city auditors, that the 115 trust wasn't recommended for the city at that time. And I think, Mike, you alluded to maybe there's been some changes in the 115 trust mechanism. Can you elaborate on that just briefly?
Yeah, you know, I don't know what changes specifically I may have mentioned before, and I don't know the background on the auditor's recommendation. My guess is that it could have been just the city's overall reserve levels maybe weren't high enough. Obviously, there's other priorities for the city and other minimum thresholds that are take priority over pensions, right? Your emergency reserves, liquidity, especially having revenue streams that are fairly volatile. I believe, you know, in the last few years with reserve levels growing, it becomes more feasible to set aside some of that money and try to earn more on it and allocate it towards pensions. And I know, as Sarah mentioned before, we have several clients that actually do build that into their overall reserve policy, so it doesn't have to be so separate in terms of tying in some of those emergency reserves, pension reserves with the general reserves.
You're correct. I do recall our reserve levels. This was probably about three and a half years ago. So thank you for that. My only other quick question is, you're aware of other cities that have done this. Have there been cities that have done this and not been satisfied or backed out of the 115 trust mechanism or any negative comments that you're aware of?
I am not aware of any, and we had a client, a neighbor of yours that actually had us help manage an RFP process, and as part of that, we reached out to all of our clients that had worked with these agencies, and nothing negative that we heard through that process.
Okay, thank you.
If I can add, the only thing that we've seen with some agencies that have gone through the process of setting up a 115, and this is all timing of an economic cycle, They've got it all spun up. They have an objective. They're going to put about $500,000 a year, $1 million a year into it, and then they hit hardship, right? And so what happens is you end up with these trust funds that don't have the funding levels that they had originally projected when they approved them and set them up. It was no fault of the trust itself. It was the fact that the economics didn't work on the city side. So that would be the only situation where we've seen 115s not be as effective, is they just weren't being funded to the level that people thought. But that's the whole idea, right? They're a reserve that you're trying to use in hardship times, and it just takes getting the money in there in the first place.
Good point. Thank you, Greg. That's all I have, John.
Thank you, Barbara. Bart, do you have questions?
I thought it was an excellent presentation, very well done, and I've got a lot of confidence in Sarah and guiding us through what picking the right choice. My only observation or comment, though, is that I'm a little concerned about the flexibility of using this money for other issues. I know I'm a broken record, but we're 15 to 20 million into what should have been spent through 218 funding mechanisms for infrastructure, and we've only done about a million of that. So giving any council, and I'm going back to 2008 now, but virtually all councils tend to, once they get some money and opportunities for it, they find ways to spend it for something else. I understand COVID is kind of a unique situation, but if there's some way to put guardrails on how this money could be used for other than the issue at hand here, I think would be appropriate.
Isn't that part of the 115, though? It's in a trust, so the only use of that money is for the pension. So to me, that's the good news and the bad news.
I would like that if that were the case, Lois. That's not what I heard. What I heard was, if it was deemed that there was some other possibly more emergent use or emergency use, the money could be used that way, is what I heard. Maybe I heard wrong.
Maybe that was my statement. I can clarify. It can only be used, and I'll invite NHA to jump in here, but for CalPERS-related costs. So that can be the unfunded liability, or it can be your annual, what's called normal costs. So I think the only time that the city would use that for the annual normal cost would be in a time of economic hardship, but it wouldn't be allowed to be diverted to any non-pension costs.
I'm not sure that I fully understand that one. So it's only for pension issues. It's not, because you're, maybe I'm parsing the words here, but the way you phrased it, it sounded like there is a possibility it could be used for something other than dealing with this pension crisis.
You want to jump in, Mike? Maybe you have a different way to explain it more clearly.
From a legal perspective, Mr. Beckman, that money, that once it's deposited into the trust, it must be used for pension or OPEB expenses.
Okay.
It can't be.
That's not why.
It can't be.
I like it then. Okay. If that's the case, then I'm with you.
Yeah, it can't be pulled out and, let's say, used for a capital project, right, or something like that.
Thank you, Bart.
I'm hearing that it's for this pension issue solely. That's what I'm hearing.
Thank you, Bart. Lois, do you have questions?
Homer asked most of my questions. Good job, Homer. And I just wanted to state or to clarify that the debt option, it seems a little more complicated, but I don't think it should be out of the question. I think a lot of agencies are using a combination of many of these techniques to reduce their liability and risk. However, the debt option, I think, is limited, by debt capacity, as well as expertise. So I'm not sure whether that's a viable one for us. The other question I have is, how do we determine when to pull money out of the trust to apply it? Do we want to do that when the rates are low? What's the strategy, and would that be developed in the policy, or who would be advising us to make sure that we take advantage of the best time? That's my only question.
And I could jump in, Sarah, maybe first to address both of those. I guess on the second question, that is something to be discussed with the 115 provider and investment advisor, and typically they can build in that into their policy. But of course, it's tough to know whether that money, obviously you don't want to have too much money in there if your UAL with CalPERS is going away, right? And so at some point in time, there's probably a strategy to start dollar cost averaging that to CalPERS, and it's something that they will help the city understand and develop a policy for. On your comment about the restructuring, exactly right. We're not going to recommend one way or the other, but we can lay out all the options. It's a fairly complex type of debt instrument, so we just wanted to be on the record to say if this is something that you want to learn more about, it does require more education because there is a lot of risk involved, and we want to make sure that you're understanding of that. It does not count towards your debt because it is unless it's a lease bond, which would count towards your debt limit, it does not count against your debt limit, so that's not a limitation. There is more staff time required. There is, credit ratings involved, so there's a little bit more work involved. It is a viable option, but again, it does carry risk and a lot of, in our opinion, education to make sure that all the decision makers are aware of these risks and this option.
Thank you, Lois. Let's go to Tina. Do you have questions, Tina?
For some reason today, I'm having trouble unmuting Zoom. Mike, super presentation, very well explained and articulated to someone who's seeing this for the first time, other than what we were handed out to review. Many excellent questions by all my fellow members. Barbara particularly asking about whether or not we've looked at this 115 trust before historically. I am a little confused about something, though, and I believe you've answered it, but let me ask it again. If we do a 115 trust, it does not eliminate our ability to make one-time annual payments, right? So in other words, if I think of it in a sort of mortgage-like way, you can buy down your debt based on whatever financial position we're in that year to make that judgment. And then maybe this dovetails to Lois's question, which I don't completely follow, but the payment out of the 115 trust is scheduled. In other words, it's not up to us to determine the timing of it, or did you say it was up to us to determine the timing of it once we've agreed with whomever's going to administer it, et cetera?
Yes, yeah, so you have full decision making on when to use that money, and okay. you can take some of that money and make an ADP payment to CalPERS anytime you wish.
Okay.
You could let it grow. You could, you know, make a big ADP at some point down the road, and those are all decisions you can make. And it's very dependent on the financial condition of the city,
exactly,
that budgetary year, right? So it's a little more flex than just sending the CalPERS the money up front, because you're not going to get that money back. There is benefit to doing that, but you don't have that kind of shock absorber type reserve that you have multiple options in which to use that money.
Okay. Thank you. That's my questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Tina. Let's go to Steve.
I don't have any additional questions, Mr. Chairman. Excellent questions and from my committee members, fellow committee members, and the staff and consultants. So nothing additional.
Okay. I appreciate that. There is one more question. Well, actually two, but one for Mike. Just to clarify, if the city did issue EOBs, that money would have to go directly to CalPERS. You could not take that money from the bonds and put that money into a 115 trust. Is that correct, because of the arbitrage rules?
The reason, yeah, that you can't have under the POB structure two debts outstanding at one time. So once you issue that new bond, that money has to flow to CalPERS to extinguish that debt on the day of closing. If you did a lease structure, you do have some flexibility with the use of proceeds. So some of it could go to CalPERS, some could go to 115. You might be able to dollar cost average that money. It's a little trickier. It depends on kind of legal review, but you're right. With the POB, it goes directly to CalPERS, so there's really no way to avoid that market timing risk, because they take that money and dump it into the market. For a lot of these restructurings we've worked on, the only way to really mitigate that risk is to build, you know, to use those savings and put it in 115, because if there was a downturn, you'd want that, you know, shock absorber in a 115. So any restructuring we've worked on, it's part of a more multi-pronged strategy that involves a 115, because you do want to look for ways to mitigate that risk of CalPERS having a down year.
Okay, thank you. And then for Sarah, when does the City Council need a recommendation from us on this?
We feel that it would be prudent for them to have a recommendation before they review the 10-year fiscal forecast and mid-year adjustments going into the budget cycle, and that's typically done in February.
So we could actually set this aside until the January meeting to make a decision?
If that's,
well, what I'm thinking
mm-hmm.
is we really have about 4:36. So maybe we could postpone a decision until next month and then get to the other items on the agenda if the City Council doesn't need a recommendation today.
Our preference is to take this to council the first meeting of January. So we strongly strongly prefer to get a recommendation today, if at all possible. Thank you.
Okay, so then do you want to take up the issue of the OPEB today and have...
So I can provide a little more info on the OPEB, and perhaps you could kind of bifurcate your decision in that regard, although there would be some advantages to providing general policy direction on both. So specifically, if CFAC is interested in reviewing the broader OPEB fiscal situation, including the updated OPEB actuarial report as part of the ACFR, we could invite the OPEB actuarial to attend the January CFAC meeting if he's available, and answer any questions about the GASB 75 OPEB actuarial report, which will feed into the 2021 ACFR. By that time, hopefully, we can have a little bit more clarity about the structure of the existing trust with the $2.1 million in it as well. And so if there were any clarifying actions that CFAC would like to take, you could do that in January on the OPEB side. I think, you know, if there's a need for the city to alter the structure of the trust that holds the OPEB funds, it would be probably beneficial for us to do an RFP or at least a selection process of some sort for both a CalPERS and OPEB Section 115 trust. There might be some advantages from a fee structure standpoint, et cetera, from going with the same vendor. So that's our intent for putting both of those staff recommendations at the broad policy level on your agenda tonight. Although, you know, we would then take that to council, as the city manager mentioned, and begin staff due diligence on that process. There would not be anything formally executed or in place by January. So I think you would still be able to have the OPEB detailed discussion in January if you'd like to learn more about the actuarial report and still potentially be able to proceed with the recommendations this evening.
Okay, thank you. So the OPEB at least can wait until next month. Is that bottom line?
Yeah, it would be helpful to understand from CFAC if the policy direction or recommendation for council is to keep those funds in a restricted trust of some sort. I mean, that is where they are now. So whether that needs to be a Section 115 specific vehicle or not is the detail that staff can look into.
Okay. If the other members of the committee feel like they have enough information tonight to make a decision, recommendation to the city council, that's fine. I don't feel like I'm there yet.
John?
We don't have any information about the cost for 115 trusts.
Public comment.
Public. Okay. Thank you, Homer. All right, let's go ahead and have some public comment then, if there's anyone out there.
Thank you, Chair. There are no raised hands in the queue.
No raised hands, okay. Well, what's the pleasure of the committee? Does somebody want to make a motion to recommend that the staff's recommendation go to the City Council with our approval?
This is Lois. I would make a recommendation to...
Make a motion?
Yeah, I'd make a motion to recommend that we go with the staff's recommendation on the 115.
Okay. And do we have a second?
I'll second that, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Steve? Okay, so discussion. Any other input on that? Homer?
I'm kind of where you are, John, on this. This is a huge deal, and if anything goes wrong with it, it could put the city in huge jeopardy down the line. And I've been thinking about this over the weekend, and I've got sort of an alternative idea. On page 14, item number 4, they recommend two things. One is to set up a 115 trust or to go ahead and make lump sum payments over the next whatever years. here's just an alternative thought. Go ahead now and set up a 115 for the OPET, since the return on that, if you recall correctly, is less than 3%. And that would get the city's feet wet in learning more and more about the 115 and how it worked, some of the issues that nobody, that didn't get addressed tonight. Go ahead and make lump sum payments to CalPERS for the next 2 or 3 years. And if the feeling was that the OPED 115 was successful, and then at that time you could go ahead and set up a 115 for the big pension plan. Sort of get your feet wet before you jump into the shark-infested waters. That's just my thought.
Thank you, Homer. Anyone else input on this?
I'd like some clarification, John. You got cut off as you were starting to enumerate your reasons for wanting to postpone, and you started with fees. This is new to me. I'm not pretending to be an expert, but I get concerned when I hear too much dramatic language. Homer, I'm sorry, but shark-infested waters, et cetera. What's going on? What are you thinking? You didn't finish your thoughts. What are you concerned about? I'd like to hear them.
Well, the 115 trust is not free.
Right.
It costs money to set it up. There's an annual management fee that they charge for the investments you have. Of course, if you put it all in there, the OPEB issue is one, so that you have $2.1 million. If you just sink all that into the trust in the first year, and then you are in an investment portfolio that has equities, which is why you actually stand to earn more than you do with government funds, then you run the risk of losing some of that principal. So, there is Mike talked about dollar cost averaging. I think anybody who's an investor, probably all of us on this committee, understands the importance of dollar cost averaging. You don't put in your entire life savings on day one into an investment vehicle because you know that's a high risk. So there's a lot of things to think about this and how to approach it and how to manage it that I don't think this committee has any idea about what the plan is.
So the motion was to go forth with the recommendation as it was presented in this meeting today.
Right.
Your concerns are that it's too soon to make that motion.
Yeah, I think that I don't think that the fresh start option has been fully fleshed out with the potential savings that could provide. I think there's a lot that have been said about the risks and the flexibility, and I think those are probably important things for the city council. But one of the things that we have to understand is that this liability is money that the city should have paid to CalPERS in the past. And there's a real risk, I think, that if that money is not paid to CalPERS in as rapid a manner as possible, that money is just going to be absorbed and used for other things. And then there's also hasn't been any analysis about how the various options can affect the general fund compared to the enterprise funds. And when you've got 25% of the liability in the enterprise funds, that's a big chunk. And there's no analysis on that. You could do a fresh start on just the police safety fund and have that affect only the general fund. Or you could have a fresh start on just the miscellaneous employees, and it's probably about half or more that it's going to impact the enterprise funds, and there's no analysis on that. So I think these things are very complicated. There are a lot of options, and I don't believe I personally have the information I need to make a recommendation.
Sarah, what's driving the timeline? I mean, obviously, the payment. But I mean, what's driving the timeline for the decision?
There's no hard and fast timeline. I mean, this is a council goal. So staff's been directed to make progress within the next 12 to 14 months on a whole number of council goals. And this is what we've deemed, you know, of highest priority. And it makes sense to do it before the upcoming budget cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we're bringing it forward as expeditiously as possible. It will take some time to implement the policy direction, and so that's why we've tried to break this up into a first step tonight to have policy direction. We haven't put forward a specific funding allocation plan, which would have the analysis that's being requested, mm-hmm. because we would first seek a partner with whom to, you know, establish a 115 trust and then move forward with seeking direction from council on how much to allocate and what the impacts would be to the various funds.
Another point I want to make is four of us roll off after the January meeting. So, John, were you thinking to only postpone until the January meeting so you still have the same intellectual capital, if you will, on this committee? Otherwise, it rolls to a whole new set of people, potentially.
Yes, that's what I was thinking, to mm-hmm. table it until January.
I think it's important to note, we're heading into the holidays, so there probably won't be opportune time to conduct the analysis that was discussed by Chair Martin. And furthermore, the risks that he outlines, which are true and worthy of consideration, would likely be handled through policy and through whatever partner we were to move forward with, if that was the recommendation of City Council. So those very concerns would be addressed. This isn't something we're just going to jump into without, you know, doing our risk analysis and making smart and prudent choices and relying upon the experts that we pay to do that for us.
Does that mean it comes back to us again, Scott, so to speak? I mean, prior to that final implementation, would it come back to this committee?
I don't believe so. I think, you know, as long as you're comfortable, and, you know, at least the majority is comfortable with this approach as far as a vehicle, that it would be sorted out by City Council and staff.
Okay.
May I ask a question? Just by virtue of recommending the trust, it doesn't preclude us or the city from adopting a multi-prong approach to this solution. I did not assume that in my recommendation.
That's correct. It doesn't close off the future potential to do other things. Certainly, it's a lot of work to set one up, and so there's just sort of the opportunity cost of going that direction. Going after a bond is, as I think Mike mentioned or Craig, it's a significant amount of staff time. So, you know, we are sort of going down a path, as it were, but it doesn't preclude us from changing paths or broadening the paths in the future.
I'm saying we could do some fresh start, some 115, some pay now. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Just it's not a one only solution. At least that was my assumption.
Got it. Yeah, and the 115 does provide flexibility to do those kind of things as well, right? As Bart sort of questions alluded to, it locks you in. You have to spend those funds on pension related costs, but it gives you the flexibility how you address those costs and how you smooth things out or do lump sum or whatever the case may be. So there's some inherent flexibility with that vehicle.
Okay.
And I just want to recognize real quick that we have Craig and Mike still on the line who have potentially examples of how cities have done this. I think, you know, the Section 115 trust would be a first step that wouldn't preclude subsequent steps, although we may not pursue all of them at the same time.
Yeah, Sarah, I think just to clarify one thing, and I think Scott just said this, but, you know, I believe the recommendation is for the $1 million and a 115 trust, but, I mean, the city will still have a $22-plus million debt with CalPERS that you can fresh start at any time. You know, in terms of risk, you know, I think it's important to note that CalPERS already has about $70 million of the city's money and about $4 million every year moving forward that's invested in a pretty aggressive way. So, I think someone mentioned before the ADPs for the first few years. You know, I'd say that the 115 is a more conservative approach because you're probably not investing in what CalPERS is investing in. So I just wanted to make sure that the magnitude was clarified. I think, you know, it's a million at least, Sarah. That's what you're estimating. Maybe it's lower, maybe it's higher, but relative to what CalPERS is investing, which is 70 plus million, it's pretty small, right? So and the ADPs can come out of the 115, or you can fresh start at any time you want. It's not going to change the fact that you have this other reserve in the 115 trust.
And if I can add to that, Sarah, I don't think what's being asked is a recommendation to really find the full answer all the questions related to a 115. There would certainly be a process that the committee would be involved in, and we've done this with other cities where, you know, just to get through the adoption of a 115 trust is a lift, as Scott mentioned, and it once you've even selected an administrator and decided to move forward on implementing it, then you're going to have the entire conversation, which I expect you all would be very involved in, which is what's your risk tolerance? How do you want that trust to behave? What are the targeted objectives and goals of the 115? You know, it becomes its own entity, right? That's what a trust is. And so there's a lot of a conversation that'll happen at some point in the future once the 115 is put in place as to what the strategy is. I mean, we've had many cities who we've spent a lot of time with talking about just the strategy of 115 investment. Do you want to be conservative so you don't lose money and play in the equities market, or do you really want to try to beat CalPERS with your 115? I mean, we're not making a recommendation either way, but those are the kinds of questions that'll really require some intellectual capital of this group, I think. You know, once you get to that point where you're trying to figure out what the strategy is for the 115.
So the way I look at this is that I approach these things with the outlook of what if this was my money? How would I proceed? And the fourth bullet point says, the recommendation from the staff says, recommend that council direct staff to evaluate establishing a Section 115 trust for OPEB liabilities and transferring the approximate $2.1 million balance to that trust. So I fully agree that that trust should be established, and I think that CalPERS has a very good low-cost trust that can fill that need. But if it were my money, I would not just take that $2.1 million and send it to that new trust. I would set up a dollar-cost averaging plan, and every quarter for 4 or 5 years, I would send a portion of that $2.1 million to the trust, because I think doing otherwise it would be too much risk. I wouldn't take that risk with my own money. But this recommendation basically says that that's what we think the city council should do. So I couldn't agree to that, so I can't agree to the recommendation. But we have a motion and we have a second. So can we call the roll call vote, Sarah?
Sure. John, can we repeat the motion, please, and second?
Well, the motion was made by Lois and seconded by Steve, and it's simply the staff recommendation. There's four bullet points, and it's the staff recommendation, which, okay, I guess we could read it. So the four bullet points are to receive and file the informational presentation on CalPERS and the city's unfunded liability and options to address and provide input and feedback. That's fine. Recommend that council set aside a one-time lump sum from fiscal year 2021 operating surplus to contribute to a pension reserve and budget annual contributions to it going forward. Third, recommend that council direct staff to create a Section 115 trust as the vehicle for the pension reserve. And fourth, recommend that council direct staff to evaluate establishing a Section 115 trust for OPEB liabilities and transferring the approximate $2.1 million balance to that trust.
I believe it says evaluate, so it's it doesn't say to move it, but I see what you're saying.
I think we're ready, Sarah.
Okay. Member Alexander?
No.
Member Beckman?
No.
Member Johnson?
Yes.
Member Peck?
Yes.
Member Weiner?
Yes.
Chair Martin?
No.
Oh, and I apologize. Vice Chair Spagnola?
Yes.
Okay, the motion passes 4-3.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. And great job, you guys. Really well presented. Okay, let's move on to the next item 3. Hopefully we can get this done in a half hour. The review of the fiscal year 2021 unaudited transactions from the collection of the general purpose local sales taxes, commonly known as measures Q and E. And Sarah, I don't think we really have time for a full presentation, and everyone has probably seen the presentation. So maybe just go straight to the questions.
That works for me.
Okay.
I've got slides if I need them for reference, but that questions is fine with me.
Okay, and I'm sorry that we are running so late, but we really do need to get to this. This has to go to the council in January. Actually, according to the policy, the council's policy, it's supposed to go to the council from the committee before December 31st. But as far as I know, that's never happened. So
that's correct.
Try to do it in January. So let's go to questions. We'll start with Steve.
I don't have any specific questions other than observation that even in last year, we had some money budgeted for street repairs and that sort of thing. And it was underspent, so I know we're working on that, but we made some hard decisions about where to allocate the money last year and the year before, and would like to see that probably more faithfully completed. I don't have any specific comments on individual line items other than that.
Okay, thank you, Steve. Tina?
Same. I'm actually with Steve. I wondered about our highway, our fixing roads, but otherwise I didn't have any other questions.
Okay, thank you, Tina. Lois, do you have questions?
Just one also about the roads. There's over 1.4 million on the plan, pavement plan. I need a refresh on how long that plan lasts. I mean, we haven't spent any money on the roads and we paid over 1.4 million for a plan. So I just want to know how long that's going to, how long that lasts.
Sarah, do you want to answer that, or we don't see?
I would invite Mr. Qualick to address the comments and questions about pavement management. And I should note that we also have, I believe, the police and fire chief on the line if there are questions for the police and fire departments.
Sure. Thanks, Sarah, and good evening, Chair Martin and members of the CFAC. The pavement plan for this fiscal year is in development. It has been designed. We had an untimely departure of our city engineer, and so that plan still has to be reviewed by an engineer here, and that's a priority of ours. We have a consulting engineer who was able to do that. And so we do hope that we will have a contractor work on pavement this fiscal year. It simply has to be reviewed by an engineer, and then we need to take those specs out to bid. So we hope to do that part of it in January, and then it'll be a matter of scheduling the contractor to perform the work.
Okay. Thank you, Greg. Bart.
I have no questions either. Thank you.
Thank you. Barbara?
Only one question. Did we ever close on the sale of a Coral Avenue property where we were going to use the proceeds to pay down the fire department loan?
Great question. Council approved the project, and then it was appealed to the Coastal Commission. Our understanding is that, because Coastal had previously weighed in on this project and had the city scale back the total number of units, that there's likely support when it makes its way to the Coastal Commission early next year. Once that's all completed, they're fully entitled, then I think the purchase would be completed. I think it's $750,000 that we're looking at.
And it's still our intention to use that to pay down the fire department.
That's a great question. I think we're going to have to go back and look, do some research on kind of where informal direction had been provided. It's a great question. I don't have the answer for. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Scott. That's all I have, John.
Homer. Thank you. Thank you, Barbara. Homer.
Why was the interest payment for the firehouse one third less than it was budgeted, since there's an amortization schedule for that?
Mm-hmm. I can answer that one. That's because there had been a past practice of accruing interest back to a prior fiscal year. That's not required because this is a governmental fund, so we're discontinuing that practice going forward. But that's why the 2021 actuals are reflected, that 4 months of interest payments were accrued back to the prior fiscal year.
Okay, and just a comment. There was quite a bit of an excess surplus in the QE this year. What are the chances of having some of that stuff get to the pavement management plan before the public works director sends it out to bid?
So I'll see if I can. We did roll over all unexpended funds from last year. So $713,000 got rolled over into the pavement management plan project. In addition to that, there was another $350,000 in Measure Q&E that's already been budgeted for 21-22, plus an additional amount. I think it was another $300,000 that's budgeted for SB1 funds. That's dependent on the timing of when we actually receive those. But overall, the project has over $1 million that's currently budgeted, including the carry-forward funds. Are you asking about adding additional fund balance?
Yes, I am, because I realize the city council has to approve that, and it has to be done pretty quickly. But, as long as the vendor is going to mobilize, you get a lot of bang for your buck for an extra $250,000. Lois the street could get paid.
And I'll just comment on that. I don't want to say it can't be done, but it would certainly delay the project because we'd have to go back out and get those segments of projects designed. We're already kind of trying to slide into home base in terms of timing with this fiscal year. So that may delay it out of this fiscal year. It's a thought. It's something we could look into, and I could talk to Sarah about offline if that's an option for us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Homer. And I don't have any questions, Lois. Sarah. So do we have a motion to we have to have public comments. Sorry. Are there any public comments at this time?
Thank you, Chair. There are no raised hands in the queue.
Okay. Thank you so much. So do we have a motion to receive and approve the presentation as presented by staff?
I'll make a motion that we receive and approve the 2021 transactions from the collection of the general purpose local sales taxes, commonly known as Measure Q and Measure E, and that the chair also prepares a presentation to be delivered to the city council in January.
Okay, thank you, Homer. And that will come back to the committee in January, for your approval before it goes to council. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Thank you, Barbara. Any further discussion? Seeing none, could we have the roll call vote, please, Sarah?
Sure, and I'll see if I can get the order correct this time. Member Alexander?
Yes.
Member Beckman?
Yes.
Member Johnson?
Yes.
Member Peck?
Yes.
Member Wiener?
Yes.
Vice Chair Spagnola?
Yes.
And Chair Martin?
Yes.
Motion passes 7-0.
Thank you. We're done with that so fast. We even have time to do the next item. Item 4, continued discussion and recommendation on council member compensation. Sarah, I just want to say I really appreciate the very thorough presentation of this issue in this staff report. You really covered all of it, I thought, very well. Much improved from last month. I think we really have the information we need now. So let me turn it over to you and see how far we get with this.
Sure, and thank you. And I'll be brief. And I think Dana Swanson is back online because she did provide a lot of the information about the benefits. So thank you for that, Dana. And I think I will go past the background since our time is limited. If we need to refer back to the stipend comparison table, you saw this last time. We have eliminated City of SLO based on the CFAC's direction last time. So the average of the five cities is here. Again, this is stipend information that you reviewed last time that we can go back to, but I will focus our limited time on the new information, which is the comparison of health benefits across the other cities, excluding the City of SLO. And so this table is in your staff report. It outlines the monthly stipend here, which is from the council member table up above. And then the data, the health data is the same for the mayors. And so that would be what the mayor stipend from the table up above. And so the total maximum health contributions per month are here in the second to last column. And then the maximum monthly cost per council member is on the far right. So in looking at the takeaway and looking at the average of the five cities, Morro Bay is actually farther behind from a total compensation standpoint than just looking at the monthly stipends. And so the average of the other five cities is 1988 as compared to a maximum total compensation of 1279 for Morro Bay. It's important to reiterate that this maximum is dependent on what each individual council member selects. And so the costs may be lower if not every council member in each of these cities has full coverage for families, et cetera. One more slide to try to clarify those cities that do have information that did give us information for self-only coverage. In Atascadero, that is an 897 amount, so they offer self-only, as does Morro Bay. The other cities offer family coverage, and so most of those cities provided us data in the aggregate, but we did get from Morro Grande and Paso Robles the value of their contributions for self-only council members, and those are 735 and 703. So that's in response to a question I received. And then this is in your staff report as well, but I'll put it up here for your reference. There are three alternatives that we presented in the staff report. We could recommend that council evaluate modifying their health benefits to align their self-only contribution with the employee contribution, which is slightly higher than what they receive now. We could provide them with a stipend that would provide family medical coverage at the cost of the lowest cost plan. Again, that's going to change every calendar year, but for 2022, the costs are here presented. And then the final option would be to match the city's contribution for all other employees who receive family coverage, which is a stipend amount, which also can change every calendar year. So those are the alternatives. And then I tried to summarize, there are a number of different ways to look at the alternatives that the staff reports presents, both on the stipend side and on the health benefit side. So I've tried to provide somewhat of a menu of fiscal impact options here. On the monthly stipend, this is the same data that you saw last time for council members. We did include the mayor stipend here as well, especially in looking at the comparison data from around the county and realizing that if the mayor's stipend is not adjusted, then the mayor's stipend would fall farther behind the council member's stipend. And as I mentioned, the overall compensation, both council members and mayor, are farther behind when you look at the overall health and welfare. The state law frames this as health and welfare benefits. When you look at the health benefits, they're currently farther behind. So if CFAC were to recommend to council that they increase the stipend as allowed by ordinance, as we discussed last time, the maximum amount would be $500 increase per month for council members and a $200 increase per month for the mayor. The fiscal impact of that would be an additional $32,400 per year for a total cost of $64,800. So right now, the city is incurring the existing $32,400 cost. If the CFAC were to recommend that council also evaluate their health benefits, then the cost, the 2022 cost of the options presented would be the cost increases here. The increase amount would be about $11,000 for option A, about $56,000 for option B, and about $60,000 for option C. That would be in addition to the fiscal impact of changing the stipend. So that would be a potential total cost increase of up to $90,000 if CFAC were to recommend both. And as I mentioned, there's probably other options, iterations of these options that you may want to consider. With that, we have provided a staff recommendation that's hopefully somewhat clearer at this meeting as well. We recommend that CFAC recommend to council that they adjust their compensation by ordinance within the limits of state law by $500 a month per council member and an additional $200 a month for the mayor's stipend. We recommend that CFAC advise council to maintain their current health benefits. And in looking at the net impact of that recommendation, that would result in a total monthly council compensation, which is still at or below the county average, excluding the city of SLO. And with that, I'm trying to be as brief as possible. Given our cutoff time, I will conclude my remarks and take any questions. And please note that city manager and city clerk are also available.
Thank you, Sarah. Okay, let's go to questions. Barbara, let's start with you, please.
No, I have no questions.
Thank you. Bart, do you have questions?
I have no questions. Excellent presentation. This was very well done. My only comment would be that if perchance any of the seven of us are thinking about running for council, it probably would be appropriate to make note of that in the discussion and vote.
Thank you, Bart. Lois, questions?
No, I don't have questions. And again, I just want to thank Sarah for, you know, outstanding preparation materials provided to us, not just this, but everything this evening. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lois. Homer, do you have questions?
The only question I have was, Sarah, what's the amount of health, for just health, for any council member that's 65 or older?
So I'll invite Ms. Swanson to comment, but they're offered the same benefits that all council members are offered, and so it would depend on what they select, what coverage they select.
Okay. Using Sarah's numbers on the health benefits for just a single individual, we're not that far out of line when you add the stipend plus the health benefits together. We're pretty close, actually, to the three cities that she actually had numbers for whatever this worth. I'm not a real fan of giving those guys an extra $500 a month. I think that there's a better use of $30,000. And, you know, if they want to, if we want to raise them 20%, fine. I don't think it makes a particle of difference in terms of the argument about attracting other people to run for city council. I can't imagine anybody wanting to run for, deciding to run for city council if they only make $1,000 a month. Anyway, that's all I have.
Thank you, Homer. Tina.
The only question I had is, is it kosher to have asked any of the city council members if they would have rather had a no stipend increase but in a different insurance option? So, in other words, give them higher or better benefits versus a stipend. Was that ever posed as a possibility? I mean, benefits are expensive. Obviously, that would make it. I mean, option B would be 56K increase if I got those numbers correct. I'm just curious. Sometimes people prefer their medical benefits over a stipend.
Great question. I've not heard that from the current council members or mayor. Not to say that they don't think that, Tina. But, you know, yeah. It's more along the lines of what, you know, Homer was speaking to. It's just the concern that the rate may not be sufficient to attract or may preclude certain folks from considering it.
From considering it, yeah. Okay, I was just curious because benefits are so expensive. But obviously that means our costs would be higher per council member also. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Tina. Steve, do you have any questions?
Probably more of a couple comments, I think, is Barbara noted at the last meeting, if all we did was increase this to cover the CPI over the last 19 plus years, we'd be at $800 for the council members and $300 for the mayor. And since we're probably not going to look at this for another 5 years, I'm kind of okay overshooting that a little bit. I'm also okay with the offering the council members what the individual employees get, because I think that's, which is, I think would be the 958. So I don't have a problem with the staff recommendation.
Thank you, Steve. Did I get everybody? Okay, are there any public comments on this issue?
Thank you, Chair. There are no raised hands in the queue.
Thank you. Okay, so we have the staff recommendation, and it is that the committee recommend that council adjust compensation by ordinance within the limits of state law by $500 per month per council member and an additional $200 per month for the mayor, and recommend that the council maintain current health benefits. Do we have a motion to that effect?
Chair Martin, I apologize. Did you ask about public comment?
Yes.
Okay, sorry.
I'll make that motion.
And thank you, Steve.
I'll second.
Tina, okay, thank you, Tina. So we're ready for the roll call vote.
Okay. Member Alexander?
No.
Member Beckman?
Yes.
Member Johnson?
Yes.
Member Peck?
Yes.
Member Wiener?
Yes.
Vice Chair Spagnola?
Yes.
Chair Martin?
Yes.
Okay, motion passes 6-1.
Okay, thank you, everybody. Let's see, we have a few minutes left here, so we can talk about future agenda items. What do you have on tap for next month? Sarah?
Next time we have your presentation regarding Measure Q&A for CFAC's input prior to taking that to council on January 25th. We also plan to have the draft ACFR for your review, and then if CFAC would like, we could explore the discussion with the OPEB actuarial. You're muted, Chair Martin.
Yes, I think that would be good. Maybe put it late so we can, we don't get to it.
Okay.
And that next meeting is on January 18th of 2022.
John, I've got a couple of future agenda items.
Okay.
Barbara and I have been interested in this for a long time, but I would like to get on our agenda an actual item to discuss the proceeds from the sale of that property on the corner of San Jacinto and Highway 1, so that we can at least make a recommendation to the City Council when and if the Coastal Commission finally approves it. I'd also like that discussion to include what happened to the original down payment, a little over $100,000 that the owner of the property made a couple years ago.
The only thing I'm thinking that would make me hesitate is that the council has, I think, already made a decision on what the proceeds are going to be used for. Is that right, Scott?
I'm not aware of that. Mr. Collins?
Yeah, and I'm not sure that's been determined, Chair Martin. I know Barbara mentioned, at least in her recollection, something about paying down the remainder or portions of the remainder of the debt on the fire station. So I don't think council has weighed in on this. But suffice to say, you know, the CFAC has been and provided the work plan for next year by a city council. So adding more work to that, you know, I think that would require, you know, the city council members kind of directing that work back to the CFAC. So that's just sort of my take on that.
Yeah, thank you, Scott. So, Homer, is there anything else that fits within our work plan that you want us to look at next month?
No, I forgot that we had this work plan that restricted us from actually being creative. You know, one of these days, I'd sure like to find out what's happening with the surplus property that's been that was presented to the City Council a couple years ago.
That certainly can be arranged as part of the discussion with Council when they make that decision, and members of the CFAC and public can also, you know, participate in those discussions with Council.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you, everybody. I think that concludes our meeting, unless there are any last-minute comments.
Hey, John.
Yeah, Barbara.
Certainly, yes. I'm one of the four positions that's up in January, and as many of you know, my family is relocating out of the area in mid-January. So I fully intend to be at the next meeting, but I just wanted to let you know I will not be reapplying for my position. I'm trying to recruit somebody, but I haven't been too successful in that yet, but I'll continue those efforts. So thank you all.
Thank you, Barbara. I'm glad you're going to be here next month.
Yeah, thank you for your service too, Barbara. We'll miss you.
And yeah. Thank you all of you too. I've enjoyed it. It's been my pleasure.
Good luck, Barbara. I didn't know you were relocating. It was a pleasure.
Thank you. Yeah.
You are my first friend. Thank you.
This makes me all the more disappointed that we won't be meeting in person next month.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I know the feeling. That's why I'm trying to bring all the history back, because my intellectual capital will only be available by email.
Yeah.
Sorry. Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. Okay. Well, it is 5:26 p.m. and we are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.